I'm talking today about life underground, who they are, where they are, and why they're there. It's going to be a talk about soil microbiology. So when I was 14 years old, my family drove across Europe from Greece, across many different countries, ending up in the UK, and for reasons that I still don't understand, I wanted to have something to remember each country by, so I collected a small bag of soil from each country. Still don't know why. And obviously I didn't know what I was doing, I just grabbed it wherever I was. I think when we were crossing from Italy into Switzerland, I kind of went, oh my god, I forgot, and grabbed some Italian soil at the border. And then I brought it back to the U.S. illegally, without a permit. And I think I ended up throwing it in the backyard, and I actually really thought about soil again for like 15 years. Just, I was walking on it, you know, it's a typical thing. There, vibrating under your feet, but I just never thought about it. And then I started working for doing risk assessments for EPA, and that's where I discovered that soil existed, that it was incredibly important, incredibly mysterious, and I fell madly in love with it. I went to Cornell to do my PhD with Martin Alexander, who, by the way, passed away this spring, so I just wanted to sort of recognize him here. So if I had studied soil, I would have used Clort, which you all should know, or you should leave the room, the factors that influence soil formation. And here's where I want to honor Niall Brady, because this is just straight out of the Bible, this wonderful book, Nature Properties of Soil, that I used as a student and teach from now, and in fact referred to in putting together this lecture, just to show you he really got like all the interconnections between all the different components of soil, the complexity of it that makes it so, I think, fascinating for a lot of us. And so climate organisms, really apparent zero climate organisms, that's what I'm talking about. Vegetation, come on, let's be honest. Right, I mean, the other organisms are there, but they're really not there. It's really vegetation that we're in. So this is where the new directions can be coming in, which is a very exciting time, not only to be a soil scientist, but a soil microbiologist. So, soil is filled with life, it's very diverse ecosystem, and we talk about microbiomes. The soil has multiple microbiomes in it. And here's a definition of one. It's a characteristic microbial community occupying a reasonably well-defined habitat with distinct physical chemical properties. I love this second phrase. The term refers not just to the organisms involved, but the theater of activity. So you'd think that an ecologist or soil scientist came up with this definition. It's not. It is Joshua Lederberg talking about the microbiomes of humans, because the human being has multiple microbiomes that we're learning more and more about. And it's really this wonderful parallels between the human body and soil with respect to life. And in fact, I think this connection is a way that can bring a lot of people to soil, because they're thinking about their bodies and their microbiomes. And so the microbiomes will perhaps be talking to each other. It won't be the humans, it won't be the soil, but it'll be the microbiomes talking to each other that are going to bring people together with soil. So we can ask a number of questions about soil and its microbial communities. Does each soil have a unique community? What determines the composition of this community? What causes it to change? How much does it change? Does it return to its original state? So before you go about this, you have to ask, what are you going to measure? And in microbiology, you have so many choices, it's just dizzying, like how many different things you can measure. So, and what you measure is very much going to influence, you know, the kind of questions you can ask and the results you're going to get. You can measure biomass, you can measure activity, you can measure diversity, you can measure phylogenetic diversity, like what's the identity of the organisms. We also call that composition or structure. Or you can measure functional diversity, what they do. And then this is a quote here, it doesn't matter what they call you, it's the deeds that make the eidocorectic woman. That's from the film Rango, which is like, I don't even know what the film is, but I got some wise sage said this, but it's the only quote I could find from it is from the children's cartoon. But anyway, it's a quote, and I think the meaning is there. So there's a number of different indicators you can measure, and then there's a bunch of different tools you could use to measure, and I'm not going to focus on that, but there's molecular tools, and you can look at lipids, and there's a lot of, and once we get into the functional area, there's a lot of advances going on as we speak. I'm going to focus on composition in this talk, because you have to narrow it down to something. The other thing that you have to ask is at what scale are we going to measure? And we've got like 12 to 13 orders of magnitude range of these scales, from the micron scale of one microorganism up through the aggregate that they inhabit to like the site at which, you know, we as humans more engage directly with the soil, to regional, to continental. So huge scale. And all of these scales are interesting with respect to this who, where, why, right? About microorganisms, they tell you different things. You have different reasons to ask questions of these different scales. So we're going to start at the global continental scale, and I'm going to talk about some of the research that I've been involved with, but also other people who've been involved in these research areas. There's been a lot of great work done on this. So at the global continental scale, this is showing you distribution of plant communities, biomes, where we know that climatic gradients are the main drivers of it, precipitation and temperature. And you can see these, you know, archetypal biomes that we know in the world. And when people first started to look at what's the distribution of microbial communities, the first hypothesis was they'll just track the plant communities. It'll just be the same. That's how they'll group, is by plant communities. But that turned out not to be the case. So this is rather than show you a bunch of studies, I'm not going to show very much data in this talk. Noah Beer just put this together in a very recent paper, looking at what are the importance of different factors and kind of making a hierarchy of importance of what is associated with the different kinds of compositions of communities that we find in the world. And they also threw in a bunch of references down below. But in general, what stood out is it's not plant communities and it's not the factors that drive plant community distribution, but it's adaptive factors. It's soil pH, carbon availability, could be quality, oxygen and redox status, soil moisture. A lot of these are interrelated, good old soil, right? Like John Muir, you take one thing and everything else is connected to it, right? So a lot of these factors interact with each other. You can't pull them out separately. Texture and less important on the plant things. So this is important for these patterns are seen in grasslands and forests, at a country scale, across the globe scale. There's lots and lots and lots of papers on it. But I think this is pretty much what 17 counties, and we really wanted to focus on ag soils. But we have here a lot of different crop soils, and also forest soils, grassland soils, and wetland soils as well, using lipids. And so here's a piece of data that you're going to have to look at, but at least it's pretty. And you can see here that each one of those dots represents a microbial community that's based on the relative distribution of these different marker lipids in it. And they're color-coded by land use. So you can see sort of clustering around the edges. And along this first gradient, the first two x-axis, there is a water gradient with this distribution from dry environments to very wet environments, with the deserts on the left and the wetlands on the right hand side, the rice fields up there. And the second gradient is a disturbance gradient, where the soils on the top are highly disturbed, getting a lot of tillage and management, and the ones on the bottom are the less disturbed ones. And you can see that the perennial ag is fitting in closely to the forest systems and quite different from the annual systems. Now, I wanted to focus on this little cluster of samples here, which are tomato samples, and then go to the site scale map. We're scaling down to the site scale. And here we're looking at changes in tomato soil communities under different management systems. So organic, cover crop and compost, conventional, just synthetic fertilizer, mixed system, which is synthetic fertilizer with a cover crop, kind of a hybrid system. And there, variations in the communities that could be attributed to these differences in management or season, because we looked at them over the growing season. We could see those differences, but they were not as big as the differences at that site compared to these other sites that we just saw in the previous graph. Right? That they were like a cluster. This made a cloud of noise around those systems. But still, you could distinguish all those systems despite these differences from other sites. And also, changes over the season, the growing season, were greater than differences between management systems. And this just shows you another one of these multivariate plots showing circles that represent different dates of all the different management systems moving over time. So each one has inside of the organic and into the conventional system. You could still tell them apart, but they all went on the same trajectory over time. And then you could detect these differences between the management systems. And the mixed system was intermediate between organic and conventional. It became a lot more like the organic. It shifted when you put the cover crop in. It became more similar. But then when we put the mineral fertilizer into the mixed system, it became more like the conventional system. So there were different organisms that were being selected by these different management practices, these management practices. So here's a couple of aggregates from the conventional and organic system, which is my segue to the next scale, the aggregate scale. So the aggregate scale, an aggregate is not just an aggregate has all kinds of microenvironments inside it. And we're talking about, you can see worlds within worlds within worlds within worlds within worlds, right? Where does it end? Aggregates, there's been a lot of work done on this with Johan Sixer group and other groups as well, but we can distinguish between the organic material that's still there, not completely decayed yet, still in clay, fraction of these aggregates, and microaggregates and macroaggregates. And we know that by looking at organisms within aggregates, they're very patchy, less than 3% of the surface area is colonized by organisms. If you were working with an electron microscope and scanning, you have to go great distances to find these big, vast areas that aren't colonized. But also, if you, another one of these multivariate plots, where each symbol represents a community. This is work by Dominic, and all looking at the communities in these different microenvironments of the aggregate. So the black dots are the whole soil sample, and you can see that they're scattered all around. But then you can see the green, the blue, and the red represent these different communities that were found inside the silty clay fraction, the micro aggregate fraction, and the macro aggregate fraction. So you have these different, even at the small scale, these different groups of organisms. And actually, those differences were very strongly associated with variation in the chemical composition of the carbon in those microenvironments using FTIR. So they seem to be tracking the quality of the carbon. Okay, why is this important, I'm talking about? Well, the resilience and adaptation of soil microbial communities, it affects how ecosystem functions and services respond to changing climate. Microbes are the agents. Change. I think they are the key to the resilience of our systems. And intimate relationships between soil physical, chemical properties and communities, composition and function, influence that resilience. You can't pull them apart. You know, we used to have chemists and we still do, but you know, they're so intimately related, and it's almost, you know, absurd to try to ignore each other, even though chemists kill the microbes. Maybe we try to pull them out of the matrices. And this is important for all sorts of functions: stability, carbon storage, greenhouse gas fluxes, litter decomposition, productivity, and quality. Food, restoration, remediation, regeneration—all these R words that are so important these days. And scale is important too. And I think at the global scale, we're interested in these patterns for looking at, you know, maybe climate change models that will help guide us in scaling up and making large-scale conclusions. At the regional scale for policy interventions, we have a California Healthy Soil Initiative where there's going to be incentives for for farmers to put carbon on soil. And so this regional differentiation in these communities will be very important in guiding that, where carbon is put. At the site scale, I mean, that's where we're used to working as farmers or remediators, right? That's the scale at which you make management decisions and implement them. And then at the aggregate pore scale for understanding these basic mechanisms, right? Because that's where, like, nitrous oxide is going to come out, or where that carbon is going to be sequestered. Right, so that's why you might want to be digging down and looking at that relationship to that scale. We need to keep up work on measuring functional diversity and traits, and you probably hear microbiologists talking about this all the time, but we have got to have better ways of looking at functional characteristics of communities and not just naming them, which is more with the phylogenetic approaches. So, if soil, I like to ask this question. I ask it to farmers a lot, both in California and also when I work internationally, and I think it's not a trivial question. Is soil alive, or is soil where living things live? Of course, Han and Annie already knew the answer. He said organisms consume oxygen, CO2, summation, respiration. Are characterized metabolism of the soil individual. Hence, I declare soil is a living system. And I trust Hans Jenny. And he also said that ecologists glibly designate soil as the abiotic environment on land. And I love it. The phrase gave him the creeps. Because when you look at the root boundary, you know, under a microscope, you can't tell where the biotic part ends and the abiotic part begins. Again, it's like this separation is like not necessarily making sense. So, more of that in it. And it's time for humans to develop better relationships with the Earth's diversity of soil. And could it help if soil is alive? If soil's alive rather than a habitat where things live, does it change your relationship with it? Because it's another living thing. And when we talk with farmers, this is a really interesting discourse. And there's a lot of different like ideas about this that I've learned about from farmers. So I'm going to end on a different note here. I've worked in Uganda for about 8 years, and looking at soil and irrigation and gender. And what has come out of the research is, yes, this realization or ways of communicating about soil. And the farmers are very interested in this concept of soil being alive. And these are two of the farmers. They're actually rappers also in one of our groups. They're not doing too much digging anymore. They're pursuing other careers. But I commissioned a song with them, so I worked with them, the lyrics with them, but they made this song, so we're going to end this plenary playing this song. All right, thank you very much.